Well, the thing is this, that yesterday when I asked you whether you owned any guns, you showed me your Silverneers and you showed me your target pistol, which is all very well and good. But I was wondering, whatever happened to that pearl-handled revolver? Because when I looked into the crate, you know, I didn't see it in there.
Lost it, Lieutenant. A long time ago. When I was in the hospital in Korea, somebody liberated it, you know, wanted a souvenir. Actually, I was pretty pleased it was taken. It was getting to be just too much of a publicity gimmick.
I see. So the Hollister exhibit is going to have to do without the famous Hollister gun.
Not exactly. MMI wanted one for their memorial, so they had a duplicate made.
I see.
Uh-huh. Now, I've got to change, so if there's anything else I can do for you...
No, that'll be all, sir.
Fine. Just a piece of advice. Find a different spot, or use a different bait. Otherwise, you're not going to catch anything, Lieutenant.
Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Thad Haight.
I'm Carl Wonders.
And this week, we're talking about Deadweight. And that's not my contribution to the podcast. It's actually the title of the episode of Columbo.
Yeah, this is episode 3, I guess, of season 1. Because
yes,
you have those two oddball episodes that don't really count. This episode features Eddie Albert as the star slash murderer, which is a trope that will continue throughout the entire show, where typically the most famous person on here is either the murderer or the victim.
Okay, but like, and I'm sure in 1971 maybe he was, but it was not a name that I knew before I watched this episode.
Okay.
He was on Green Acres. I don't know, because I've never seen Green Acres.
Yeah, so this is overlapping with the final season of Green Acres, or he was just coming off of Green Acres.
I'm aware of Green Acres, but I've never actually seen it.
It's a show. I haven't watched it in a long time. I barely watched it when I had the opportunity to watch it.
I'm going to have that theme song stuck in my head now, though.
It's pretty famous, yeah. Yeah, I jokingly referred to this episode as the Nick at Night murder, because between Green Acres and Suzanne Plachette is the other main guest star in this episode. She would then star in the next year after this came out. She would start starring in the Bob Newhart show as Bob Newhart's wife. And that's where I really know her from. So it was interesting seeing two people people my age grew up watching these old TV shows on Nick at Night reruns, which was kind of the predecessor to MeTV, if you know that at all.
Yeah, I am familiar with Nick at Night. I think we've probably talked about this before. I didn't have cable growing up, mm-hmm. but whenever we would like go on a trip or something and we would watch TV in the hotel room, I specifically remember watching Dragnet on Nick at Night a lot.
That was a big one on there too. Yeah. Yeah. So they went with Eddie Albert. Read in the behind the scenes stuff that the producer of this episode originally wanted to get somebody like Lloyd Bridges to play the part.
I can see that.
And I like Eddie Albert. I think he makes a decent murderer. I think he's all wrong for this role, to be perfectly honest, playing a very calculating former Marine general. I don't necessarily buy that.
He has the look, at least.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He definitely has the look. His demeanor is much softer, I think, than I would have expected. There's quite a bit of behind the scenes drama with this episode.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so Peter Falk was notoriously difficult to work with, even early on. This was filmed before any actual episodes had come out, the two TV movies we've already talked about, but then the other episodes were in the can, but they hadn't been released. Peter Falk did not necessarily get along with Levinson and Link, and he wanted another producer that he was familiar with and had good rapport with to kind of be a co-producer, kind of as his security blanket. And he went off and got this guy, Everett Chambers. At the same time, he decided, I want to direct an episode of Columbo. And the studio was less than enthusiastic about this idea. They had had some difficulties with Falk. He was very meticulous in his acting and would make them do multiple takes and everything. And they just said, oh, God, he's going to take five times longer to film an episode than what we have. Mm-hmm. So they said no. And Falk's response to this was to pout and go to Chambers, who was his buddy, and say, what should I do here to get leverage? And Chambers said, get sick, be sick, and have to go home and can't, so you can't film. So that's what Falk did. He showed up one day and said, I don't feel well, went back to his trailer and then went home and wouldn't come back to the set until the producers, the actual producers, went and got their own doctor to go and check him out and find that there was nothing wrong with him and called his bluff. Meanwhile, because this is TV and you're on short schedules, the director just did a whole bunch of shots from behind with a stand-in, shooting Eddie Albert, Suzanne Plachette, and others either over the shoulder or from behind shots. And then when Falk came back to the set, the director said, I'm done. We're everything's in the can, because Falk wanted them to reshoot everything with him. And the guy said, no, I'm not doing that. And he even refused to go and shoot the inserts with Falk. And the producer guy that gave him this advice had to go and direct those insert shots of when the camera is facing Falk now. And this led to a very negative experience for everyone involved on the filming the episode, as you can imagine. Suzanne Plachette was good friends with Peter Falk going into this. She said in interviews that she wouldn't talk to him for about a year or so afterwards, because it was just such a terrible experience. And Eddie Albert, who my understanding is was a very nice, kind person in real life, went to Falk on set after this had happened and said something along the lines of, I've always wanted to meet you and I've always wanted to work with you and you're a real asshole. And that was that. So this drama would continue throughout. There isn't much of the season left, but they eventually did give him the final episode of the season to direct. And quite intentionally, it is probably the most complicated one in terms of filming, because there's a lot of location shots and stuff that's involved. So they wanted to basically stick it to Falk and say, fine, you want to direct an episode? Here's this mammoth beast of an episode to deal with. And Falk has never directed again. So so I guess it worked, or he just didn't enjoy the experience, but he did get to direct an episode. So that's the behind the scenes a little bit, which is why in the final scene, you get all these weird shots from behind Columbo, and that final shot from like up in the rafters as he walks Suzanne Plachette out the door talking about his niece and nephew or whatever, and you don't see his face. It's because it's not Peter Falk doing that.
Yeah, my understanding is basically every shot in the museum that's from behind, it's somebody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's get into the episode and discuss, why is the general wearing a bathrobe when he's wearing a shirt and pants underneath it?
That is an excellent question. Maybe so he's shaving, so maybe he doesn't want to get bits of hair on his clothes?
I mean, maybe, but it's an electric razor, so in theory, it's actually most of the hair is going inside the razor.
Maybe, yeah.
Also, I do want to say, because I'll forget if I don't mention this now, because it just occurred to me. He mentions to Columbo that the big event at his alma mater is to celebrate his 20th year since retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Generals don't normally retire in their 40s.
Well, they talk about him being injured.
Oh, that's true. You're right. You're right. Never mind.
Like a bomb goes off or something and he's injured and he's forced to retire.
Yeah. I'm not sure how accurate that would be either, because like generals aren't normally needed to, you know, do physical activity either.
True. And he seems to be
fairly fit now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But officially, generals retire at 64. That's like the thing. Like if you make it to flag rank, you stay in until later. Right. If you don't, then you do end up retiring earlier.
Yeah, so he's being visited by this guy. I don't know how on earth he became a colonel based on what I've seen of this guy that shows up at his door, who I guess he works for Material Command and he was doing some kind of shady business dealings with the general here. The general, I guess, had a second career in some sort of construction business or something.
Yeah. They say construction, but they also say weapons. So I'm not fully sure what exactly he does, but either way, he was giving bottom level quotes, and then so that he would always get the contract, and then he would add additional costs after the fact. And that
right
was the scam here.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, then so the colonel guy comes and says that Colonel Dutton, I guess his name is, comes and says that the inspector general is looking into the contracts, and he's gonna basically run away to Switzerland, which is a real good sign that you're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing. And the colonel's saying you should run it, you should get out too, and General Hollister says, no, I'm not doing that.
Also, Switzerland is a weird place to run away to. I feel like they're misconstruing Swiss banks with extradition. Maybe. Because Switzerland has extradition treaties.
Yeah.
Like, the place you really want to run away to is Brazil.
Yes. Switzerland, they'll take your money, but they tend to look down on people who are not Swiss. So,
yeah. No, I just looked this up. Switzerland will extradite anyone who is convicted of a crime that with a punishment of 1 year or more in jail.
I think this counts.
Right. So, yeah, but he says he'll disappear. They'll never find him. So,
yeah. I'm not going to disappear in Switzerland, though.
That's what. How are you disappearing in Switzerland? Where are you going?
I mean, if he is going to somewhere like Brazil, why are you going to Switzerland first? That makes no sense.
Right. Well, maybe he's got to empty his Swiss bank account first.
Maybe.
But yeah, Brazil is the... Actually, I want to say Brazil might actually have an extradition treaty now, but it always used to be that Brazil was the place you mm-hmm. could go that didn't have an extradition.
Yeah.
But yeah. There are places you can go that you could hide. I don't think Switzerland is one of them. Also, if you were going to Switzerland to hide, you shouldn't book a direct flight from the United States to Switzerland.
No. I mean, later when Columbo comes back, he's like, he was supposed to be on a plane to Switzerland and he didn't show up. How well are you, or how good of a job are you doing, like, hiding your tracks here?
Right. And this was like, you know, 1970s when you probably could book a flight without, you know, everyone knowing that you did it.
Hollister doesn't believe him that he's not going to confess or, you know, implicate him in any way if he gets arrested.
I mean, that's probably a safe bet.
Honestly. I think seeing this guy in action. Yes, I don't. So did he, and Columbo makes a comment about this later, too, similar to it, but did he pack that gun loaded in the crate?
Which gun?
The gun he shoots him with.
I guess.
I mean, he like reaches into the crate. We don't see what gun it is because I guess that gives away the ending. But
yeah, he does just pull it out of the crate, doesn't
he? Yeah.
That seems unlikely.
And at the end, Columbo makes a point about how, I would keep that gun well polished and I'd keep it in my house and I would keep it loaded. And I'm like, I'm glad you don't own a gun because
that's not what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And another tick mark to the reasons why Columbo should not be around children.
The primary one being that he thinks popsicles are ice cream.
Yes. I was thinking of him just randomly pushing that kid on the swing. That
that too.
Apparently, when this shooting occurs, these two women are out in a boat, and Miss Stewart, played by Suzanne Plichette, sees the thing happening, which is even impossible. Pointed out in IMDb as impossible.
Like, they show you the house, yeah, like as soon as she's pointing, and the only thing you can see through the window at all is like on the ground floor. You can see through to a window on the other side, but mm-hmm, that's all you can see. You can't see people. You certainly wouldn't be able to see a man in a bathrobe shooting a man in a uniform and be able to say that's what you saw.
Right. Yeah, no.
Also, that outfit that she is wearing is something.
That is a, they're both wearing. So yeah, we have Suzanne Plachette with a jacket and a red and white paisley jacket and matching bandana. And her mother, played by Kate Reed, wearing this yellow and blue floral thing a choice.
And just, I'd like to take a moment to point out that Kate Reed, who is playing her mother, is 7 years older than she is.
That is an unfortunate thing that happens a lot to certain women in acting, I think, where they get pegged to be older than they are.
Yeah. And like, I will say she is 7 years older, but she, like, the way she plays the role, I could believe her as the mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she her career tends to be these types of roles. Mm-hmm. She's really good at it. So. Yeah.
But also, I feel like Suzanne Plachette could easily be younger than the 34 that she is in this.
Sure.
When she filmed this. Like,
yeah.
I looked it up because I didn't know how old she was. I wanted to see the age difference between mm-hmm, her and Eddie Albert, which is significant, by the way.
It is.
31 years.
Yep.
And like I could have seen her anywhere from late 20s to mid 30s, mm-hmm, which is mid 30s is what she is. So yep. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with two adults having a relationship like that, but
a 34-year-old and a 65-year-old, yeah, there is nothing inherently wrong.
No.
There are some power imbalance possibilities. Yep. Also, when one of them is a murderer who's only dating her to cover up the murder, that's obviously
I was going to say that there are other reasons to object to this relationship that forms later in this episode that have nothing to do with their ages.
Yeah. And I will say, in and of itself, a 34-year-old and a 65-year-old in a relationship is not a problem. Mm-hmm. But they would never have done it the other way around.
No.
They would never have had a 34-year-old man with a 65-year-old woman.
That is true.
And that's the problem.
That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. That's a Hollywood problem, though.
Yes.
I mean, this is where Columbo gets called in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like the cop.
The nice thing where the cop doesn't know he's a cop.
Yes. This spot's reserved.
He starts to get back in this car. He's like, oh, wait.
He's like, wait a second. Who are you waiting for? Little self-awareness there from Columbo, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And he is smoking his typical Candela there.
Mm-hmm. And we see Columbo once again skirting the rules here, where he says, go check out the guy's boat. And then while you do that, I'm going to go ask the guy if it's okay. And then if it's not, we'll get a warrant to do it. Which isn't quite how that's supposed to work, but
no, but I didn't understand it at first. It was only when he asked him about it later. The reason was he wanted to see if the engines were warm, if he had taken the boat out to move the body. So when Columbo rings the doorbell, mm-hmm, the general is in the process of pouring himself a glass of ice water from a pitcher on his bar into a wine glass.
I think it's a martini.
Okay. A martini glass. No, it's not wide enough to be a martini glass, is it?
No, but I think he's making himself a martini, isn't he?
Do you use ice water for a martini?
Oh no, I guess it is ice water. Never mind. That is ice water.
Yeah. I'm just not sure what's up with that.
I just assumed based on the glass that he was mixing himself a cocktail, but it's definitely ice water.
It is an alcoholic glass of some kind. I think it's a wine glass, but it's hard to say for sure because he's holding.
At least he's not pouring the water from a coffee pot.
I suppose. Like
the guy last time.
But like, why does he have a pitcher of ice water on his bar in the first place?
I don't know.
How much water is he drinking tonight? That he has his pitcher of ice water ready to go.
There's got to be a giant sweat stain on that bar.
I was also thinking that.
This general does not respect wood. Fun behind the scenes fact here. When Columbo flashes his badge, you get a nice close up of it and you can read that it says Frank Columbo in the signature.
Ah, yes, it does.
Because to quote the behind the scenes again, people never thought that viewers would be able to read the name on their state of the art 19 inch Zenith television. But thanks to, you know, high definition now.
Yeah. And you can see that he's badge number 235.
Mm-hmm. Levinson and Link have always maintained that he has no first name. And I guess the prop department just came up with something.
I mean, the man has a first name. What they would maintain would be that we never know it. But surely, like, in universe, he has a first name. He just never tells anybody.
In universe, he has a first name, but they never decided what it was.
Okay, but it's apparently Frank.
It is apparently Frank.
If you ever saw his wife, she would probably call him by his first name.
Yes.
But where's Kate Mulgrew when you need her?
We're going to watch those.
Can you watch those?
I think there's one episode on the DVD box set for Columbo, or on the Blu-ray box set for Columbo. So this crate.
It's apparently on Tubi.
Oh, okay. I mean, there's only like 10 episodes.
Oh, no, never mind. Tubi has a page for it, but it says content unavailable.
Well, that's annoying. That's very Netflix of you, Tubi.
Well, Netflix doesn't do a page for it, but what it'll do is, did you mean this? And then they'll say, right. You want to watch this instead.
You search for something. It's like, here are things that are like that.
It is on the Roku channel.
I'm not buying a Roku just to watch Mrs. Columbo.
I'm pretty sure you can watch the Roku channel on anything.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah, it's free with ads. Yeah, I can. They may only have season 2.
Kate Loves a Mystery?
It's still listed as Columbo, but they have one episode from season 2. Oh, no, they just have things arranged weirdly because they have one that's called season 1980. And then 12 episodes from season 1979. So there are some episodes of Mrs. Columbo available on the Roku channel, apparently.
Well, and they changed the name to Kate Loves a Mystery at some point in the second season. So I don't know. Maybe that's the only Mrs. Columbo episode.
Well, we should, if we ever watch James Bond Jr., we do also need to watch Mrs. Columbo.
I'd rather watch James Bond Jr.
I mean, I don't know. Mrs. Columbo might not be horrible.
I mean, I don't mind watching Kate Mulgrew do mysteries.
I have no objections to watching Kate Mulgrew from the 80s. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too.
So, yes, Columbo, possibly Frank. Well, he is always Frank, but...
Yes, he's very...
Okay, maybe it is a martini. What is that? It's shaped like a martini, but it's not as... Oh, no, it is a martini glass. I'm thinking of...
I was thinking
of a margarita glass.
Oh, no.
Which is wider. But yes, that is a martini glass. But it was just ice water that he poured into that. Is there a martini that you make with ice water? No.
I hope not.
What do you call that? As opposed to shake and not stir and just dump it in. The third option, shake and stir and dump.
All of the dilution and none of the benefits of mixing your drink properly. So how are they like? So they, I like Columbo's, and like he insists that they open this crate up, and he's like, "Well, they're already closing." He's like, "It's only two nails. They just started, you know." And they open up this crate that's like half packed.
That crate is all that stuff is going to get horribly like mangled and whatnot because there's so much empty space in that crate. And he's like telling Columbo those uniforms have been have been arranged specifically for the, they're not going to be that way when they arrive there.
The second the taller guy on the one end picks up the crate, everything's going to roll to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he puts loaded weapon. I mean, he says that the firing pin has been removed from these guns, which you can't tell anyway, because they're assembled. But yeah, like this is not how you pack things.
That is also not a clip in the PPSH.
No,
it is a drum. When he talks about the drum, that's right. But also there, why would you include both of them anyway? It's the same gun.
One has a drum and one has a magazine.
Right. But like, you could put the drum or the magazine on either of the two guns. Like, you could. Why would you, what? Anyway,
there's a lot about the exhibit that I don't quite understand.
Also, like, maybe it's because I'm from a time period farther in the future, but it just feels weird to talk about Korean War heroes. Like,
mm-hmm.
The Korean, like, my knowledge of the Korean War is mostly just from MASH. But yeah.
Me too, yeah.
But, like, I don't recall the Korean War being, like, a big, like, heroic thing.
No, where we eventually just were like, okay, redo and then left, you know,
like, yeah, like eventually they're like, okay, we'll just go back to the status quo and say the mm-hmm. war didn't happen, basically.
Yeah. Columbo talking about the fan with the light bulb and the streamers and everything in it. This house might be even more impressive than that other guy's house with all the white brick in it.
This house looks more like it could still be a house today.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I appreciate a good conversation pit. I think we've had this conversation before.
Yes.
Not in a pit, because I don't have one. But
no. I don't even think it's a conversation pit. It's just one of those houses that has levels.
Maybe.
Because it goes all the way back to the bar.
Oh, I guess it does, yeah. Yeah, I guess there's just that raised area. There's the one raised area. There's a dais mm-hmm. in this house as opposed to a pit.
Yeah.
But, like, this house could be a house, like, get rid of the carpet, and this could mostly be a house that someone would live in today.
Mm-hmm.
The carpet would have to go, especially on the stairs, but...
Oh, you don't want the red carpet everywhere?
The red carpeted stairs? No.
I like the red carpet leading up to the lawn sculpture that's behind him in that, like, plant area. Yeah,
the
area.
Sculptures also should go. And there is the detailed mahogany wall behind the sculptures too.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the wood paneling wall on the other side of by the bar. So that, you know.
Yeah, did all the rich people back in the 70s have secret like panels in their furniture? Because we had that one guy that had the bar behind the bookshelf.
Oh yeah.
And now he has like the rotating wall of guns that he hides the body in, we find out later.
Also, what is going on with the wall in the hallway?
The blue wall?
Yeah, is that wallpaper or what is that texture?
It almost looks like beadboard or something.
Yeah.
That hallway just doesn't feel like it goes with the house at all. And it's weird. Like, you have this door that then goes into a hallway and then to another door.
Well, I mean, the hallway, presumably these are both doors off the hallway. The hallway presumably goes farther.
Yeah, but where? Because, anyway, I don't know.
Also, you would not use that color carpet today.
However, you did use it a lot back then, in the 70s. Late 60s, early 70s.
And that TV.
Mm-hmm. The TV?
The TV and his... I can't even tell. Is this his bedroom, or is this just his getting prepared room, and he has a separate bedroom? I don't know. Well,
he calls it the master bedroom.
He does. But, like, the bed is, like... tiny. Is that the bed there behind the
yeah,
that's like a twin bed. Who has a twin bed in their master bedroom?
Well, a lot of couples did in the 50s. They had two of them.
Yes, but this is a single twin bed. His bed is smaller than his closet.
He wasn't expecting to have Suzanne Plichette over for dinner, so
but also and we talked about this before, the TV on his dresser.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is an interesting design.
It is.
And it also appears to be angled such that you can really only watch it when standing in front of the dresser. Which,
when he was shaving, yeah.
Yeah, which he shaves with an electric razor. So we're talking like 2-3 minutes max. What's he doing with the TV?
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's a funky design TV.
I want to believe that that's a real TV too, not like that one time that they took the monitor. And hooked it up to.
No, I think it is a real TV. It's got an antenna, although singular antenna is unusual. And it has tuning dials on the front. What are the things sticking out of the middle of the screen at the top? Do you see that?
I think that's just a reflection.
No, because if you...
Oh, no?
Watch when he walks towards the closet, it pans to the side, and those...
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're... Yeah, that's...
Because those aren't...
So the screen is much smaller than you think it is.
Apparently. Like, that whole black area is not the screen.
That could be for, like, color tuning and
they're
whatever.
They're so far in from the side, though.
That's weird.
I don't know what's up with that. What are the big leather things in his closet on the shelf? When he opens the closet and you see the uniforms on the shelf above, there's two big reddish leather things that almost look like, I don't know, maybe couch cushions or something.
Yeah, they do look like couch cushions. Very large attaché cases.
I'm also curious what's in the blue and white box. I can't quite read what it says.
My first thought was they're bullets, but it doesn't make sense. And then I'm like, maybe it's like mothballs or something. I don't know. But yeah.
Mothballs would make sense. Yeah. And he has a painting of himself as like a European dictator.
Yeah. That picture is weird because that is not a military uniform that I'm familiar with.
Well, certainly not a U.S. one. It looks like portraits that you see of like European monarchs, like like you'd expect like King Charles to wear something like that.
Yeah, the sash especially.
Yeah, so he comes up with this story that the woman clearly saw him walking around in a bathrobe and him trying on one of his old uniforms and him holding his starter pistol, and that's obviously what happened, and he didn't kill anybody.
Of course it is. And what I can't tell, and I wasn't sure about this the first time I watched it or the second time just now today watching or yesterday watching it, but like I can't decide if Columbo buys his story or not.
I don't think he does.
Okay.
I think he's just trying to make the guy think that he's off the trail.
Maybe. He just acts like he just acts a lot more dismissive when he goes back to talk to Suzanne Plachette later.
I think he's trying to get her to insist.
Okay.
I think so. Maybe. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So I guess they live at a place with a communal pool.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, apartment buildings have pools.
They don't usually have bar carts at the pool.
No, that's true.
That's quite the elaborate bar cart at that pool.
Can we go back a second and talk about Eddie Obert goes to this doc guy?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, hey, a friend of mine waved at me. I don't remember who it was. And he gives like their address and names and all this information to the guy. That's not cool.
I think he knows the general, so he feels more like
maybe.
But... Like, this is the sort of social engineering stuff that does happen all the time.
That's true. No, it does. It does. Yeah.
But yeah, he goes. So Columbo goes to visit Mrs. Stewart and her mother.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard of Red Crown vodka. Have you?
No.
That's what they're drinking with enormous ice cubes.
Here we go again on ice cubes.
They're apparently drinking iced vodka, which if you're not storing your vodka in a cold place, that does make sense.
I don't know why you drink straight vodka anyway, but...
I don't.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't drink straight vodka. I would put it in things, but I... No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do in Russia all the time, but there are plenty of places where people do drink straight vodka. I would not.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
Personally, I'd much rather... If I'm drinking straight liquor, I'll go for whiskey, thanks.
Yes. Yeah. This apartment just to me feels like they just threw whatever they had on hand into it. she's apparently making pottery and we find out later has a kiln in the house.
Speaking of which, I don't think clay melts in a kiln if you leave it in too long. I think it would just like
get brittle, probably.
It would might crack, but I don't think it would melt.
Yeah. No, that was a interesting thing that happened.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening in this apartment. And we have a tasseled rug on top of the carpet here.
Mm-hmm. I did recognize that was a llama.
I also recognize that was a llama.
Columbo did not, but...
No. What I found interesting is that it has a very detailed snout, and then the rest of it is not detailed at all.
Yeah. Well, that's as far as she got.
Yeah, I guess.
The fellow that owns that house is a retired Marine general. He says that if you saw him in the window, one, he was alone. Two, he was wearing a bathrobe.
Well, what about the man in uniform?
Well, he says that later on, he did try on an old uniform, and he was carrying a target pistol at the time. He says he happened to trip over a crate that he was packing. Now, to you, does that sound like a reasonable explanation?
Oh, very reasonable. But it's not what I saw.
But I do like the way she says that. She's like, it is a reasonable explanation, but it's not what I saw.
That is good.
And then she says she has better than perfect vision, which is not a thing.
Nope.
I assume she means that she has better than 20/20 vision. But if your vision is perfect, then no one could have better vision than you.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I don't think you could quantify perfect vision.
I like when Eddie Albert shows up at the door and the mom just like carries the knife with her to the door. Like the way she's walking, like she's about to stab whoever's there.
I appreciated that the mom insisted on seeing Columbo's ID.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's supposed to be about her character, but it makes sense. I would want to see the ID of... Especially somebody that looked like Columbo coming in.
I mean, because some men don't want to look like an unmade bed.
I really like that line.
Hey, that's nice, isn't it? And that beautifully cut, custom tailored. You know, I think it's almost too nice. I mean, all that concern about clothes, it's kind of vain, don't you think?
Some men, Lieutenant... do not want to look like an unmade bed.
Yeah, so Eddie Albert should not have gone to the door. Like, gone to see her. This is dumb. He should have left it completely alone. He also should have gotten rid of the pistol. At the very least, if he didn't get rid of the pistol, he shouldn't have given it to the museum.
You know, so... Yeah, we'll jump to the end, because we find out that the pistol that's on display there is the murder weapon. Like,
yeah.
How did it get there? Because what I can't tell is he, so at one point Columbo goes to him and asks about the pistol because it's a famous pistol because they're cribbing off of.
And what he Patton. Says is that the museum had it made.
Correct.
Not that he had it made and gave it to the museum, but the museum right. had it.
The
made.
The museum had one made to, as a cop to be a copy. So it's there. So a, Columbo just needs to go to the museum and say, hey, did you make a pistol for the, make yeah. a copy of the pistol for this guy, which he apparently doesn't do. But second of all, did they actually do that? Because otherwise, like, either he somehow got in there and put the pistol on display or he swapped it out, which
well,
also
they apparently leave their display. Well,
they do not
locked,
lock their glass cabinets. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot that doesn't quite make sense about the pistol being on display in the museum. But regardless, if he hadn't kept the pistol, or if he had kept the pistol and kept it hidden in somewhere that Columbo couldn't find it, which is easier said than done, I know, Columbo would have nothing.
Correct.
And going to see the witness and then, like, dating her does nothing for him.
No. Well, I mean, aside the obvious benefits of dating somebody, I guess, but
well, sure. Oh, so you think he like legitimately wanted to date her?
Not at first, but I can't tell by the ending whether
because
he actually goes and apologizes to her, and I can't decide if he actually did like her or not.
Okay, I suppose it's possible that he did end up actually wanting to date her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do like the idea of we're going to. So doubt in this person's mind to the point where she's like, oh, I didn't see anything. And she recants everything that she said she saw before. I think that's an interesting twist on the story.
Mm.
This would be a much shorter episode if that didn't happen, but I mean, it already feels like they pad a little bit. Like, we get to see this very long news broadcast about his military career that we don't necessarily need.
Which Columbo, well, it's because he went and told her to watch it on the news.
Sure. Yeah. But I don't need help to be this long.
And Columbo's watching this from the diner where they're advertising their $1.25 dinner. That's
meatloaf dinner, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the same chili guy as the one that was at the chili pool hall.
Yes, I looked it up, and he apparently never plays this guy. The guy never comes back. It's only
in these two episodes. He does. Yeah.
I was like, oh, is this a recurring character? I mean, technically, yes, but no. Mm-hmm.
There's a handful of actors that show up all the time in bit parts. The guy that plays the Doc Man will show up in almost every episode in some way or another.
Yeah, and this actor, I think, shows up in one other episode, but not as the chili guy.
He might be in the William Shatner episode, now that I think about it.
Well, let me pull it up again. I want to say, because I think it said, I believe I saw that he plays two different characters in Columbo. Boy, his IMDb profile picture is interesting. Timothy Carey is the actor. He was in Airwolf. Yes, in one episode. He played the Catman. I've never seen Airwolf, but I'm amused that the guy played the Catman. I assume that was his call sign and not just like an anthropomorphic cat.
Catman was like the spinoff of Manimal or something.
Yeah, so he was in Ransom for a Dead Man, which is the separate TV movie and not the episode. Mm-hmm. And then he also was in two episodes of Columbo as two different characters. One, the reprisal of his Ransom for a Dead Man character, and the other one is somebody else. He's in a season 6 episode.
Yeah, Fade into Murder, which is the... I know exactly who he plays now.
Is that the William Shatner one?
It is the William Shatner one, yep.
Or one of the William Shatner ones?
He plays a deli guy. So it's basically the same character.
We're going to have trouble figuring out which characters were in Star Trek in the William Shatner one.
It's
so hard.
Walter Koenig is in that too.
Nice. Oh, briefly. He's the Star Trek actor in the William Shatner one.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I thought it was weird that the news broadcast says, if any man in recent memory may be said to have had charisma, certainly that man was General Martin J. Hollister. That is a weird thing to say in your news report.
That feels like something in an opinion column today.
Yeah, and when I'm watching this and they're describing him, I'm like, oh, so they're trying to make him Patton here. And then after they finish, straight up Bert says he was just like Patton.
Man, could you imagine if they got George C. Scott to play this part? I'm being serious. Like, that would have been interesting.
Yeah. I've actually never seen Patton.
Oh, okay.
I'm aware of it, but yes.
Yeah, yeah.
As so many movies from before 1980, I have never seen it.
It's good, but very long.
As so many movies from before 1980 are.
Yep. And post 2010.
Yes. Jeez. I have a friend who says that there's a sweet spot that, like, no movie over 3 hours, 3.5 hours is bad, but lots of movies less than 3.5 hours and more than 2.5 hours are bad.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a line that you cross where it stops just being, we need a better editor, and it becomes like they're telling a legit story at this point. It needs to be this long.
But I would argue that the no movie more than 3.5 hours is bad rule is immediately disproven by the existence of Gods and Generals.
I was thinking The Irishman because I couldn't finish that. But
oh, I actually did finish The Irishman. I don't think I'd ever watch it again. I didn't hate it. I thought it would have worked better as a miniseries.
Yeah.
I also thought it was kind of funny that, like, they did really good job de-aging Robert De Niro, but he still moved like somebody who's the age of Robert De Niro.
Yes. Yeah, there's only so much you can do with computers.
like when he was supposed to be in his 20s, like, he looked the part, but yeah, oh boy, he didn't.
That early onset rheumatoid arthritis really sucks.
But no, I actually did watch The Irishman. I watched it in one sitting. If it hadn't come out during you know, lockdown, I may not have done that, but I did.
I remember sitting down to watch it, and then at one point having to either get water or use the bathroom or both or whatever, and pausing it and thinking to myself, oh my God, it's only been an hour? Really?
Oh man. I don't think it was The Irishman was terrible.
No.
If you held a gun to my head and said, you need to watch a ridiculously long drama, you have to pick either The Irishman or Gods and Generals, I'm going to pick The Irishman.
Okay. I'll pick Return of the King, the extended
version. Well, yes. Yeah, or Das Boot.
Das Boot's a good one.
The only problem with Das Boot is that I have limited mental capability for watching things with subtitles.
Okay, that's fair.
And Das Boot is definitely stretching that. Like, when I watched, a lot of times if I get into a TV show, I'll just binge the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But when I watched Shogun, I was only watching one episode a night because I'm like, well, there's so many subtitles, I can't.
Well, it's like watching two things at once because you have to watch the acting and then you have to read what they're saying. So
you can't look away from the screen.
No. you can't listen while you're looking at something else. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't you can't just scroll Twitter for a bit while watching something with subtitles.
No, you cannot. Did you watch Pachinko?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I know.
It's what on that Apple is. TV. It's a Korean Japanese drama.
Ah.
And they up the subtitle game because they do Japanese and Korean. So Korean is in orange and Japanese is in blue.
Interesting.
So, and they actually, then they subtitle English when people speak in English. They just subtitle it in white at the same time.
Well, if it's on Apple TV, they probably also have an English dub too, right?
I don't know, actually.
Because I think Apple usually does. Because I actually have, I know a lot of people will, you know, say this is, you know, almost a criminal way to experience things, but I actually do watch a lot of foreign stuff with English dubs. Like Netflix, everything foreign on Netflix has an English dub, which I think, I watched the ridiculous movie about the sharks in the Seine in Paris with an English dub, and I don't think it detracted from the movie.
Okay. I don't know that one.
Oh, I forget what it was called, but it was about like these super aggressive sharks in Paris that were like eating the Olympic swimmers.
Nice. That's not the worst thing that could happen to an Olympic swimmer in the Seine, actually.
But then like they also like turned the movie into like a whole like, you know, cautionary tale about destroying the environment, and eventually like the sharks caused the detonation of old World War II bombs and sunk all of Paris.
Oh, man. This movie sounds amazing.
It was a ride.
Nuclear or just, you know, weaponized destruction of Paris is not a twist that I saw coming in a movie about sharks in the Seine.
Same.
I have my screen paused on him taking off his tuxedo jacket.
Oh, nice. Oh yeah, I'm coming right to that. Oh, yes, that is a
that lining is something.
Yeah. I feel like that's a very of its time sort of thing though.
Maybe. Just makes me think of Seinfeld.
It almost looks like a patchwork quilt.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that he wears an undershirt under his bathrobe but not under his dress.
Under his tuxedo shirt. Yes. I actually really hate when men don't wear undershirts under their white dress shirts. And
oh, it looks so bad. So bad. I hate it.
So bad.
I don't like the feeling. I wear an undershirt under a solid colored dress shirt, too, because mm-hmm. I just I'd rather have the cotton shirt on my skin and not the dress shirt.
Yeah, me too. His tracksuit is also a choice.
His tracksuit that he leaves hung up in the closet?
Yes. Yes.
This time I think he poured vodka and not water.
Yeah, I was going to say that's or tequila or something. I don't know what it is, but.
And yes, he hits his button to swivel around the hidden weapons compartment where he's got the colonel's body plastic wrapped and hung up.
Yep.
So this is somewhat off topic, but it occurred to me while watching this. Whenever watching a murder mystery, it's always like getting rid of the body seems to be such an insurmountable task for people.
Right.
I feel like they're not going through your trash when you put trash out. Especially if you put it out in like, I mean, a body, it'd be tricky to get into a trash bag. But like, I don't know, if you can manage to cut the body in half, which I feel like you could do. And you put it in two multi-layer heavy-duty, like, contractor bags. And then for good measure, you take it somewhere else and put it in front of someone else's house. or like the dumpster behind the, you know, Quickie Mart or whatever. Like, no one's ever going to find it. It's going to end up in the landfill and no one's ever going to find that body. Even if you put it in your own trash, as long as you do it quickly enough, I feel like a lot of these people put too much effort into convoluted body hiding when we have an industrial complex of sticking stuff somewhere and compressing it and making it impossible to find. Like, it's the system is right there.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, when I fill a contractor bag with whatever and put it in my trash can and then they dump it into the trash truck, no one is ever looking inside that bag.
Well, okay, but the trash people aren't picking up bags that are 50 pounds.
Yeah, they are.
I can't fit a 50-pound bag in my trash can, but
I can.
Okay.
You don't live in the suburbs.
No, I don't.
I've got a pretty big trash can. Yeah, okay. No, you absolutely can.
Well, especially if it's those trucks that actually pick the trash can up and dump
it. Yeah, that's what they do here.
Like, yeah. Okay. No, we still have, you know, people actually pull the bags out of the can. And throw them in the truck.
And I guess in 1971, that's probably how they did.
Yeah.
So fair. But I'm thinking today, if I murdered someone and I stick half their body in my trash can 1 week, leave the other half in my chest freezer, stick the other half in the body in the trash can the next week, no one's ever going to find it.
I prefer you not test this theory.
I'm just saying that seems like a safer option than when you have you're well known to have a boat. You know the police know you have a boat. Taking the body out in your boat and dumping it in the ocean. I feel like immediately fingers are going to come back to you when that body gets found.
Dexter would be appalled at his method of getting rid of a body in the water anyway.
But also, does he not have like a chest freezer? Couldn't he just like hold on to the body for a while?
Didn't look like it.
That's fair. I don't know. How common were chest freezers in the 70s? Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't alive then.
I like Columbo's very obvious, I'm going to stand here with a fishing pole and wait for you to come home.
I do like, at the end he says, find a different spot or use a different bait, otherwise you're not going to catch anything.
Yes, that's a good line.
Yeah.
And you mark the classic Columbo thing of my brother-in-law, and he's like, oh yeah, you don't know him.
George, my brother-in-law, George. Oh, you don't know him.
You don't know him.
So then the general goes to the petting zoo where the witness works.
Mm-hmm. The Ark Park.
Yes. It's where she works with children and animals.
Yes. And I can't tell if this is a uniform that some of these people wear, but there's a woman wearing the exact same shirt who leaves as Eddie Albert shows up, and I thought it was her.
I did too. I don't see anyone else wearing it.
So wardrobe messed up, I guess.
Or that's her stand-in who's also working as a...
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
That could be her stand-in who's also... They also decided to show as an extra for that scene.
It could be, yeah. But he talks her into going out for drinks.
And this is a scene should mention, because it is on IMDb, as they're out for drinks, the camera pans an establishing shot and we see an old man behind the bar wearing a bright red sport jacket. Mm-hmm. That actor is for some reason listed on IMDb, and he is Chester Jones. He's listed as bartender uncredited, and he is, in fact, he's been dead for a long time, but he was born in 1899, so there is someone from the 19th century in this episode. Mm-hmm. Also, it is, I suppose it is worth noting, the only people who are still alive that were in this episode are some of the extras.
They're probably the children.
Yeah, the Marine Corps cadets and mm-hmm. a couple of the extra police are still alive. Honestly, honorable mention to Eddie Albert for dying in 2005, which was 20 years ago, but he made it to 99.
If you told me that the man in this episode lived to 2005, I would not have believed you.
Well, we've talked about this before. people got old faster back then.
That's true.
Remember Sean Connery in Diamonds Are Forever?
Mm-hmm.
And he just died a couple years ago.
Here's where General Hollister flies at her at warp 10 or warp speed or whatever the quote is from yes. Voyager.
He even likes, like, well, maybe we could have children is basically what.
Oh,
saying.
I know. Oh,
yes. And that's where like the 6534 just feels really creepy.
A little bit. What is it? Like you may have lost the battle, but you may not have lost the war.
Yeah.
Do people put hot glass coffee pots just on a pot holder on the table?
I mean, you could.
it just looks weird to me. I don't know.
Normally you would leave it on the coffee maker.
Yeah. At least you put it on a pot holder, but
yeah, she did put it on a pot holder. Well, cause it really is hot. You can see the steam.
Yeah. And steaming. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it makes sense if she thinks, oh, we're going to have more than one cup.
Yeah.
It's not as weird as a pitcher full of ice water sitting on a wooden
bar.
Sitting
on your bar. It's true.
I mean, I would generally, if I had that kind of coffee pot, I would leave it on the coffee maker on the warming plate, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, Columbo's talking to the mother, and Helen comes home, says she was out with the general, and Columbo's, well, this is interesting, because I didn't give him any of that information, so he somehow tracked you down.
Yeah. And she takes offense to him, like... Well, he could be interested in her or could be something else. And she takes offense to this, but
yeah. And he shows her a photograph of Colonel Dutton and asks if it was the person that she saw him shoot. And she says she doesn't know.
Right. And he keeps wooing her and they go out on the boat and he takes her home and makes her dance and all this stuff. And
he shows her that she couldn't possibly have seen him kill someone.
Right. I mean, that's the whole reason they're out in the boat.
Yep. But yeah, I guess the fact that he keeps, I guess he really is interested at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But now the body of Colonel Dutton appears.
Yep.
And interestingly, the woman who screams when she sees it, she was in an episode of Star Trek.
Oh.
She's just credited as Lieutenant. So I'm guessing it wasn't a big role in Requiem for Methuselah.
That's not an episode I tend to watch a lot. Actually,
there's a lot I like about that episode yeah. until you get to the part where like Kirk falls in love with an android and needs his memory wiped. And then I'm just like, what? This episode took a huge left turn.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
he's so distraught and like he,
I like the concept of the guy that lives forever and has been all these famous people. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like, what?
I like Columbo mentioning that, like, oh, the sharks must have chewed through whatever he was wrapped up in. It's like, what?
It's possible.
Not how sharks work, but okay. do these people go out fishing in shark infested waters? I mean, I guess it is the ocean, but
technically speaking, any part, any water could be shark infested. Yeah.
Even the Seine.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, because these sharks also had like a mutation that allowed them to swim in, to live in fresh water.
Okay. Good. Because, yeah. Here we get a reprise of that moment in the episode when Lee Grant takes him up in her plane.
Yes.
Where General Hollister gets Columbo to go out in the boat with him. My only gripe here really is that the mixing is really bad and you can't hear what they're saying half the time. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but
yeah,
I think I would have preferred to hear the dialogue. But I do like the line about you'd think somebody with a name like Columbo, you'd be used to being on a boat. And he's like, must be the other branch of the family.
And I'd just like to point out, not, you know, we won't even get into, you know, all of the reasons that Christopher Columbus was a terrible person. But he also wasn't known for his, you know, seamanship either. The flagship of his fleet, the Santa Maria, crashed into a sandbar because he decided to go to go to bed and not leave anyone at the helm, and sank.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so then Columbo goes to Bert's for a bowl of chili,
and Bert has all of his army memorabilia from when he was in World War II,
including a flag that he puts in the chili.
Yeah. He's going to get him another bowl of chili.
Yeah.
All well, the fact that he has all this stuff and he says he can't get rid of it is what sparks Columbo to call up Helen and invite her to go to the museum.
She's wearing an interesting bandana that matches her shirt again.
Yeah. She's consistent.
Yeah. Actually, I guess that's a hat. That's like a, yeah, that's a beanie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beanie that matches her shirt.
That's even weirder.
Yes. I've never in my life considered a beanie to be a stylistic choice. I've only ever worn one when my head's cold.
It feels very late 60s, though.
Yes. I mean, the design on it, especially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, where is the Nazi flag that you noted in your notes?
It's like in the background.
Of, oh,
like,
there it is. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's behind him.
Yeah.
There is a swastika there.
Yes, and it's in a lot of shots. And it's just like, really? I don't understand why it's there at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, it is in a lot of shots.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's where it's not Peter Falk. And
yes, there's a lot of not Peter Falk in this scene.
And yeah, it doesn't 100% look like Peter Falk either. Mm-mm. They do a good job with the inserts, though.
They do.
Like, there's one where he reaches out and grabs her arm, and they cut to the extra doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's the continuity's pretty good. Like, if you didn't know,
yeah,
you might start to think that some of these shots are a little odd, but I don't think it sticks out.
I did not notice this while watching it.
Okay.
Read about it after, and I'm like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I didn't notice this when I was watching it. So that, yeah, makes sense.
Here's where Columbo is commenting on the uniform and how he thinks it's a little bit much. And this is when she says some people prefer to not look like an unmade bed, which is, again, a good line.
So then Columbo just says, well, he thinks that pistol is the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it is.
Well, I got the implication that they've already done the tests on it.
See, when the general says that, I got the impression that they hadn't. He was just confirming that it was, so now they will. But either way, Columbo has some concrete evidence and doesn't need his suspect to admit that they committed the crime this time. So good job, Columbo.
First time. You know, I do think actually that they did do the testing because I don't know if they would get permission to have the officers there to arrest him.
Oh, that's a good point.
Otherwise, because they already have them there on site in plain clothes to arrest him. So I'm thinking that this is already a done deal.
Speaking of which, the officer who doesn't speak, who arrests him,
mm-hmm.
Was an extra on several episodes of the original series of Star Trek. Which this sort of thing happens because this is only literally only 2 years after TOS. Right. Ends.
Yep.
I don't recognize him in particular from Star Trek, but he was in Star Trek. The actor's name is Gary Wright.
And he's the guy that's on the left, I guess.
Yeah.
Our left.
Yes. The guy who just stands there and frowns.
Yeah.
He was a Vulcan litter bearer in A Mock Time.
Oh.
I would, so this museum at the military academy, yep. The guy standing guard in the background, I assume, is a cadet at the military academy. Mm-hmm. Why is he wearing spats? Why does the uniform include those giant white spats? Because they look terrible.
Wow. Those are big spats.
Presumably not his choice. I'm assuming that's what the uniform calls for, but why? Why would you wear white spats with black shoes? Yeah, because the other guard on the other side is also wearing them. So, yeah, it's part of the uniform. Mm-hmm. I do like the final conversation there between Columbo's extra and where he's comforting her by saying that, you know, that she feels the way his niece Marilyn felt after her divorce because she's got a new husband and he's a cop.
I'm seriously considering locking myself in a closet for the rest of my life.
No, that's wrong. That's just the way my niece Marilyn felt after her divorce. Now she's got a new husband. As a matter of fact, he's a cop, and I got 6 kids.
Lieutenant, I mean, just between us, would you tell me the truth? Do you really have a niece?
Well, what kind of a question is that? Do I really have a niece?
Well, do you?
Of course I've got a niece. My wife's sister's girl, Cynthia.
And she says, Lieutenant, just between us, will you tell me the truth? Do you really have a niece? What kind of question is that? Do I really have a niece? It's like, of course I do. My wife's sister's girl, Cynthia, which you'll note is a different name.
Yep. He has a lot of relatives.
Yep. His wife also says a lot of things. All right. So that was Dead Weight.
Yeah. So what do you think?
It drags at parts, mm-hmm. I think. I feel like the romance subplot is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was all right.
Would you think it was weird if they were closer to the same age, though?
It would be less weird if they were closer to the same age.
Yeah.
But also, it's a long, drawn out like part of the story that I feel like isn't really necessary.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, wasn't how he solved the problem. Like, the entire romance plot doesn't affect anything about how he finally solves the case.
Yep. It doesn't even lead him to accidentally think of anything.
Right.
He gets the idea to invite her to this museum, but that doesn't actually cause anything to happen.
No, he was already going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. It's a strange choice, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think, no disrespect to Eddie Albert, but I think he's just a bit boring. I mean, compared to, like, we had Jack Cassidy and we've had Robert Culp and Lee Grant and, you know, like, these other murderers are way more compelling, I think.
I think Robert Culp is my favorite murderer so far.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you like him because he comes back 2 more times to murder more people.
Excellent. They should have given him the chair and then it wouldn't have a problem.
Apparently he's a real asshole in real life too.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
He's also dead.
Yes. Yes, he is. And as we've established before, he has no relation whatsoever to Stephen Culp. Yeah. And then, so next time we have that episode that the first one we watched the one time I was over.
Mm hmm. Yeah, that's the next one, isn't it?
Next one is suitable for framing.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember enjoying that one.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite of the first season and one of my favorites of all of them. Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensetospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS. I think that's pretty much everything to say about Dead Weight.
I think so, too.
So until next time, we'll be watching more Columbo.
Yep. License to Steal will return with Suitable for Framing.